Inserting that now. So hi.
So I can sit, I can kick back, I can do whatever I want.
You need a pause.
All right, thanks, Jared.
Bye, Jared. Okay, yeah, so at any time you need a pause, just let me know.
Okay.
So it is August 8th, 2019. I'm Taylor. I'm sitting with Dr. George Mihalik at Bailey Library for the Oral History Project. How are you?
Well, Taylor, anytime you're at the Rock, you're on campus, you have to be feeling good.
Yeah, absolutely. So just as a starting point, tell me a little bit about yourself, biographical information, your name, date of birth, education, stuff like that.
Well, as stated, George Mihalik, and I was born in Culver, Pennsylvania, and grew up in Ebensburg, Pennsylvania, attended Bishop Carroll High School, and upon graduation found my way here to the Rock. And you know, I'll never forget, you know, my dad brought me here, and well, I came pre-season or pre-students for football camp, and I'll never forget my dad saying goodbye at that stop sign right outside of the field house, the lower level field house. And I watched that car drive away, drive away, drive away, till I couldn't see it anymore. I kept moving, kept moving. And I kind of looked around and said, what am I doing here? And little did I know that just on the other side of that wall at the field house, you know, I would make my career, part of my career here at the Rock, as the head football coach and a professor. I met my wife Laura here at the Rock. We have two daughters, Jenny Lee and Beth, and they each have two children. So proud grandfather. Jenny Lee's boys are named Tyler and Christian, and Beth's children are known as are named Hannah and Deacon. So Jenny Lee's a grad of the Rock. Her husband Teddy Wright is a grad of the Rock. So two nephews are grads of the Rock. Sister-in-law's grad of the Rock. So, you know, the Slippery Rock tradition goes deep within the Mihalik family. My daughter Beth graduated from W&J, and her husband Jamie from West Virginia. So Slippery Rock is a big part of the Mihalik family and has been for 40 some years now.
That does run deep, honestly. I didn't know that much. So what's your affiliation with the university? I know you did coaching for a while, mm-hmm. and you were a teacher. I know, obviously, you said you went here. So, like, you can start from, like, the beginning, like, whenever you went here as a student.
Okay. As a student, I came here to the Rock, and like probably a lot of students, didn't really know what I wanted to major in.
What year was that?
That was 1970.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Obviously, Taylor, you weren't born, even close.
Not even a thought.
But anyhow, 1970, and came, and you know, primarily I was recruited to play football. That was kind of the main reason for attending the Rock. And upon getting here, eventually I chose a major, and it was business. And you know, because everybody was saying, a lot of jobs in the business world, not many jobs in education. Well, it got to the point where my sophomore year, second semester, I wasn't doing well in the business classes. I just wasn't interested. And one of my coaches said, well, what do you really want to be? And I said, I don't know. He said, in your heart, yes you do. What do you really want to be? I said, well, I'd love to be a teacher and a coach. Well, then do it. I said, but there aren't jobs. He said, there will always be jobs for good people. So that's how I found my way into the education realm. And specifically, I majored in health education here. Interesting story, though, that second semester of my sophomore year, I went home on a Friday night. Told my mom and dad that I'm going to quit school. Now, my dad was a coal miner. And he was a coal miner for 42 years. And I'm very proud of that work ethic and family heritage. So Saturday morning, he said, why don't you come underground with me? So I did, and we spent the entire day underground. And it was a scary experience. Mm-hmm. So after the day, we were, you know, cleaning up, and I was coughing, and a disease for the miners was known as black lung disease, and I was coughing. I said, "Dad, I think I have black lung disease." I was only under there one day. He looked at me, and never forget his look. He said, "George, the day you quit school, you're underground with me for the rest of your life. Now you decide, you want to use your mind or your body to make a living." Guess where I was Sunday morning? On my way back to the Rock. Mm-hmm. Changed my major, health education, and upon graduation, I stayed here as a graduate assistant and worked on my master's degree. So I got that degree, and then from there, I went to the University of Kentucky for 1 year as a graduate assistant football coach. And then my coach, Coach DeSpirito, he called me, and there was a part-time position here. Part-time teacher, professor, and coach with the football team.
Was he the coach that encouraged you to do the teaching and the coaching?
Yes.
At the time?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, Coach D, as he was fondly known.
Okay.
So, you know, I always wanted maybe that Division I experience, but I had it. Mm-hmm. And thankfully I did, because I didn't want that. I wanted my family to have roots. So when Coach D called, immediately I came back, and part-time position turned into a full-time temporary, and then the third year turned into a full-time position in the health science department, and I never left. Never left. 40-some years, counting the undergrad and you know, my working experience. 45 years here at Slippery Rock. And great. As I said, met my wife Laura, raised our girls here, and we still live here at the Rock. So yeah. It's been a great place. Okay. For my family.
And in those 47 years, how have you seen the university change, the programs, the departments, the coaching
yeah.
itself, and the kids?
Sure.
And, you know, can you go into that a little bit?
I mean, the community changed.
Okay.
I mean, when I started here, we had a movie theater.
Oh.
We had stores downtown. And so, you know, the town has changed it to modern day now. You know, we have a lot of variety of restaurants and, you know, some establishments for alcohol. So
right.
the town has upgraded itself.
Okay.
The university, I mean, just amazing. The dorms that I remember, you know, as an undergrad, don't exist anymore. Well, yeah, there's three that's still standing.
Right.
North Hall,
new ones.
Rhodes Hall, and Patterson was a dorm, but now is, you know, classrooms and office space. So it has changed tremendously. The academics, you know, I was very involved with the development of the safety management program. Upon being hired, I was my assignment was to write, develop, and get approved a Bachelor of Science program in safety. So that was a big challenge.
Were you on a team with anyone, or?
Well, the department,
okay.
you know, was supporting, and, you know, the research showed that the demand for safety professionals was going to be far greater than the supply, even into the early 2000s. So now you're talking about late 70s, 1978, and they're projecting this big need for this profession for, you know, 30-some years beyond that. So we developed it, and, you know, I'm very proud to say, you know, the goal then was to have the department, its own department, which it is, Safety Management Department, and our own building, which was just created and formerly known as the BSB building, now known as the Strain Safety Building. And the dreams come true. So seeing that program from nothing to getting it approved by the state system. The first graduates were May of 1982, and now, you know, the close to 500 majors in that program, in our own facility, and it'll be the top program in the nation. There's no doubt in terms of safety management.
So you not only started that, you also taught within it, right?
Like, yes.
The first teachers?
I was a professor in the Department of Safety Management, and I really enjoyed that dual role. So not only professor, but head football coach.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't happen much you know, across the country at the college football landscape.
Right.
Coaches are coaches, and that's it.
Right.
So I was kind of, I guess, maybe a bit of a dinosaur. That's the way it was early in my career. You know, my coaches, Coach DeSpirito, Coach Konjorski, they were teacher, professor coaches. But as the years went on, that separated.
Right.
Where now you were simply hired as a coach or simply hired as a professor. But I maintained that dual role, and I really enjoyed that for this reason, Taylor, because I could look at any one of my players and say, I'm not asking you to do what I won't do. Mm-hmm. I'm asking you to go to class. I had to go to class. I'm asking you to prepare for class. I had to prepare for class. I'm asking you to practice. I had to attend practice.
Right.
So the only thing they did that I didn't do was they played the game and lifted weights. Those days were over for me.
Yeah.
But so I like that dual role because most other college football coaches, head coaches, were saying, you have to go to class. You have to do this, do this, do this. Well, I was doing the same thing. So,
so it kind of leveled the ground a little bit.
Yeah, and I think it was, you know, a great example to our players that you have two responsibilities. Mm-hmm. You're known as a student athlete. Mm-hmm. I was known as a professor coach. So we walked the same walk.
Right. And then, like, because I have a quote from, like, one of the interviews, and it was actually whenever they were doing the stadium dedication.
Okay.
And you said, when football ends, I still have that life, that job, that teaching profession. And mm-hmm. so, like, I just kind of wanted to know if you want to talk about that a little bit. So, like, it felt like it was very, you know, pro-education. But I don't know. How have you, like, continued that quote past your retirement? In
well, you know, it's very interesting because that was a common statement
okay.
to the team and the players.
Right.
Look, yes, we're focused on football. We want to work hard. We want to win. But remember, football will end someday. Something called life doesn't end, and that's going to be your job, your career, your profession. So that's why you're here to graduate. Mm-hmm. And I was proud of that. I was proud of that role. And as I told them, all of us, our football days are going to end sometime.
Right.
Mine did. I still had that career as a professor.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I always shared with them, I said, you want to do two things. If you attend Slippery Rock and you're going to be a student athlete, here's our two goals. On graduation day, on one hand, when you walk across that stage, you're going to carry your diploma. On the other hand, you're going to wear a championship ring. And that was the goal for our team and our players. We were a two-lane highway. It wasn't just athletics. It wasn't just academics. We were doing both. I was doing both. And I think that's why, you know, we had a very successful graduation rate.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those guys, football ended, but they're doing very well in their careers.
That's such a good philosophy. Did you ever have, like a teaching moment or a coaching moment that, like, really stuck out to you, like, in particular, or...
I mean, there are so many memories,
right.
So many memories on the field, so many big games, so many great victories. In a classroom, I think the greatest joy was, you know, when you had students that just had that hunger, that passion, that desire to advance, to learn, to get as much out of a class as they could. You know, that was very rewarding and satisfying. And also, I took a lot of pride in sometimes those students that came here, and students are on all levels. You have the higher end academic student, the middle range, and those that, you know, on paper their grades, their test scores aren't like some of the others. But I found the greatest joy in those students that succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes they were told, well, I don't know if you can do it. But don't ever doubt someone's heart. Give them an opportunity. Give them a chance. So in a classroom, that's what I enjoyed. And on the football field, I think the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You had some players, some guys come in, they were just talented. They had it. And other players came in and they had to work hard the freshman year, sophomore year. Maybe they didn't play till junior or senior year, but they stuck with it. They worked. They ended up being starters, all conference, all Americans, and champions.
Yeah.
So I always, I guess, like seeing the underdog win.
Yeah.
Or succeed.
And plus, you played yourself, so you kind of know firsthand what being on the field is like, and kind of fostering that.
And,
as well.
And you know, in athletics, I mean, it's having good people around you. As a student athlete here myself, you know, tremendous coaches that mentored me, great teammates. And then in my career as a head coach, fantastic assistant coaches, great players. I mean, too numerous to mention. I'd forget somebody,
right?
And but they were all, in my opinion, they were all great. And in the classroom, in the academic setting, I had some great professors who were mentors, who helped me develop that safety program, who helped me strategize and create my own teaching style. So I was fortunate to be surrounded by good individuals here at the Rock.
That's awesome. And so what, like, the buildings that you worked in, was it just the Strange building or the
You should have seen my key ring.
Okay.
It was big. I taught in McKay Ed Building. I taught in Eisenberg. I taught classes in Swope. I taught classes in BSB. The football office is in the field house at the stadium. I mean, the weight room.
Did you ever
I had a lot of keys.
Yeah. Did you ever have like a favorite place to teach or be around? Or
well, I think the most favorite was what was known as BSB.
Okay.
There were times when maybe our office was in Swope, but we taught in Eisenberg, and a lot that's a challenge,
right,
carrying your materials. Or the office was in Swope and we taught at McKay. So it was great when the safety program found its assignment or its place in the BSB building, and the majority of our classes were in the BSB building. So, and there's nothing like being on a football field in that stadium. That's great.
Yeah. How did you feel the dedication of all of that?
Oh,
I can only imagine.
I guess, I was overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And
to have something named after you. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, did I ever think it would happen? I mean, I was stunned when President Robert Smith, and we had a football banquet each year at the end of the season. And, the president came, made remarks, and at the end of the banquet, he said, "And I want to make a special announcement now. And this coming September, you know, the stadium will now be known as Mahalik Thompson Stadium."
Mm-hmm.
Well, when he called me to the podium and presented, you know, a picture of the stadium or, a little proclamation at that point, I was speechless.
Yeah.
And I'm not speechless very often, but I was. And then to stand there on the track at halftime of our first game when the official dedication or announcement, however you want to put it, and my entire family was there. You know, my mom was able to be there. Unfortunately, my dad had passed on.
Yeah.
So I wish that coal miner could have seen that. And but my entire family was there, my brothers and extended family and in-laws. And just to have that experience and hear that announcement, it was, as they say, surreal. Pinch me.
Right.
And, I think that the most gratifying point was I was alive to see it. Many times buildings are named or dedicated and the individuals have passed on.
Yeah.
But in this case, that was, talk about highlights of my career, that could have been,
yeah.
It's now, up there, but yeah. It's one of the top.
And now, and probably in the next how many ever years is going to be people just like you getting dropped off and like they're looking at the stadium and they're like, what's his name? Do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And and kind of going back to that, like you're coming, your dad dropped you off. Like what was your, aside from being like, what am I doing here? Like what were your like other impressions of like the university and like the programs that you were in? And
you know,
talk about the business stuff, but.
Back then, you didn't visit a lot of colleges.
Yeah.
Your generation,
yeah.
Okay, Did you visit?
I visited 10.
Okay.
That was a lot, yeah.
So there it is. Perfect example. Today's society, young people are visiting numerous colleges. Mm-hmm. You didn't do that back then.
Right.
You know, I came up one day for a visit with Coach DeSpirito and football staff. Mm-hmm. And that was basically it. I went to visit one other school, and it was just something. Coach DeSpirito really impressed me. He was my mentor.
Right.
I really owe a lot to him. And so from that perspective, I always felt this way. Good people make good programs. Mm-hmm. And Coach D was a good man.
Yeah.
And that's why I wanted to be part of that program. So, you know, it was like, I remember coming here for freshman orientation. That's when I really saw most of the campus for the first time. And the campus ended at the, I'll call it the old Student Union.
Yeah.
That was the farthest most building. The stadium wasn't where it is today. It was behind the field house, known as Thompson Stadium. Mm-hmm. So there's been so many changes, but you know, to come here, I came from, you know, a small town, average size high school, and just to interact with a lot of different players, and it's, as you're finding out, college is some of the best years of your life.
Yeah.
It was a great experience.
Yeah. And so did you, other than coaching and teaching and whatnot, were you a part of any other campus activities, like committees, like outside of those, or were you just so caught up in doing?
You know, as an undergrad?
Or even professional or undergrad? Or?
Well, as an undergrad, I did join a fraternity, and it was known as Alpha Sigma Phi.
Okay.
So I joined that. I mean, and you know, that was a circle of friends, but I had the team also as a circle of friends. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just one-dimensional. You know, really, I was fortunate enough to have, you know, a wife that, I'll just say, the average student body and the athletic student body in terms of teammates. So then as a professor, as an assistant coach, that really takes up a lot of time. I was on a lot of committees in our department. You know, academic forum, as they called it, you know, many other student type committees. But for the most part, I was working on my doctorate degree.
Okay.
So working on that, raising two little girls, my wife and I, and she was a second grade teacher at Grove City School District. That's where Laura's career was. So, you know, it didn't leave a lot of time outside of that in developing a bachelor program.
Right.
So.
You got a lot on your plate.
Yeah.
I can really imagine. Let me see. There's a lot of questions here. So going back to the teaching and the coaching, I know you said that there are so many memories that, you know, kind of go together and you appreciate them all. But did you ever have any, like, worst teaching moments or, like, the hardest part of coaching for you or, like, a time where you're, like, you know, crunch time, a game time or whatever?
Okay. I think both as a coach and as a professor, some of the situations that frustrated me the most, maybe that's the word, or I felt I didn't succeed, was when there was an individual who had talent and you couldn't get them to utilize their talent. So in a classroom, you see a student that's, you know, has great academic, great intellectual, but they're kind of wasting it. And how do I reach them? How do I get them? How do I get that light bulb to turn on? How do I get it on a football field? You know, this guy has some great skill, but he won't work hard. He doesn't use them. How do I light that fire?
Mm-hmm.
And when I couldn't get that, whether in a classroom or the field, that's where I felt that I didn't succeed.
Right.
That's where I felt that I didn't do my job, maybe put it that way. So those are the things that I wish everyone, put it this way, I wish I could have motivated, succeeded, and had everyone reach their fullest potential. But that never happens. But on the flip side, when you had those, as I said previously, who don't have as much talent or intellectually has to work harder, and they do it and they succeed, I mean, that's the positive.
Let me see what else. So were there any, because again, you were here for such a long time, do you remember any like major or events or activities that you, like while you were here, so it could have been like, again, you were part of making that entire safety program, were there any other like building projects or like weather stuff or anything that like comes in mind of like milestones for Slippery Rock?
Probably when we became a university.
Okay.
You know, that was a big deal for the entire community and the whole campus.
So you were here for like the state college?
Right. Okay. Yeah, when I attended, it was Slippery Rock State College.
Okay.
And then, you know, fortunately saw the transition to Slippery Rock University.
Yeah.
Well, it was Slippery Rock State Teachers College.
Right.
Then Slippery Rock State College, and then Slippery Rock University. So that was nice to see. But just the development of campus was so nice to see. The expanse, you know, going from a student body of maybe 2,500 to 3,000 students to where we are today, you know, 8,500 plus, somewhere in that ballpark. So that was nice to see the growth. And, you know, the new buildings, the new construction, I mean, our fitness center, oh my goodness. I mean, you talk about, you know, impress a prospective student.
And you went into the health science stuff too, so you kind of knew what the bottom line of that was.
Yeah, like, and then, you know, from just activities here on campus, and still today, you know, when you bring in some of the bigger names in entertainment, you know, some of the performers, you know, that was always nice to see. As undergrads, you know, we had some big name bands, and then even today, you know, to see in the spring, I guess, mostly or falls when they bring them in. But to me, one of the most special times on campus as an undergrad and as a professor slash head football coach is homecoming. I always said there's nothing like a Rock homecoming. I mean, the excitement, the thrill on campus, the alumni coming back, you know, the students, just the festivities surrounding that weekend.
Yeah.
I think there's no better weekend on a college campus than homecoming weekend. And you know, I've been around for quite a few of them now, from 1970 to present, so that's a lot. But and you know, that's a weekend that we circle, and in my entire family, we tailgate, and which they did all the time during my career as a head coach, and we continue to do that, especially on homecoming weekend.
Do you ever have like a favorite homecoming game?
let's see, probably about 25 of them, because we won.
Okay,
yeah. Anytime you won a homecoming game, that was...
It's a good day.
That's a good day.
That's awesome.
And our record was pretty good. I think we were like 25-3 on homecoming games, so... I made it a big deal with the team that this is maybe the only time most alums will see you play.
Yeah.
Now, with the ability to stream games and watch on video, you know, everybody can watch games now.
Right. Which is a good thing, because then you end up, you know, get more bodies to watch it. And
You know, in my last few years as a head coach, you know, alums, I'd get emails or notes from alums in Oregon, Arizona. Hey, you know, we watched the Rock, great game, and so forth. So the internet is a big positive in terms of athletics.
Right.
And allowing alumni from all over the country and world to view and, you know, watch their alma mater perform.
That's awesome. And like you also said, like alums were like emailing you about, you know, the homecoming game and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever have like a past player that like stayed in touch with you or like went big or, you know, like, or just a success story generally?
Oh, I have a lot of relationships with former players.
Okay.
And, you know, I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
So once they graduated, it didn't end. And I really like that. And with safety majors as well, a lot of connections. And, you know, we've had the players go on into the NFL.
Right.
You know, a couple of the guys I coached, Brandon Fusco, currently having a great career in the NFL.
That's awesome.
With the Vikings, the 49ers, and the Atlanta Falcons. There were other guys, again, Ricky Porter, 8 years in the NFL, Greg Patera, Chuck Sanders, and then other guys in the Canadian Football League and the Arena Football League. You know, I'd start naming them, but I'd forget somebody,
I don't want to
offend anyone. But, and I enjoy watching them on TV. And then the safety students now, you know, keeping connected just from that professional standpoint, it's fantastic. So that's the reward of, I guess, having a college life.
Yeah.
You can continue those relationships far beyond. Put it this way, Taylor. I never went to work. It wasn't a job. I never once said, I don't want to go to work.
Yeah.
I enjoyed my job. That's why I stuck around so long.
That's awesome.
But I enjoyed the job and I enjoyed the experience.
And that also comes, you talked about Despirito, you talked about like your coaches and your dad and everything kind of influencing you. So whenever you decided to, whenever you became a coach, whenever you became a professor, when you first came to campus, what were your first impressions of the other people that were around you, like other, you know, teachers, and how did you coming in as a new head coach kind of like shift that, like shift the team?
Okay. Well, let's first talk from a faculty professor standpoint. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was intimidated.
Yeah.
I mean, here's professors that were real intelligent. And again, what am I doing here?
Right.
I don't know. Do I have the knowledge to be a professor? You know, so I had to gain, I guess, that confidence that my knowledge base was something I could share with young people and help them develop their skills.
And you were finishing your doctorate at the time,
right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I think I had to overcome that. I was a little bit cautious, maybe.
Right.
And, you know, until you gain that confidence that, okay, I know the subject material. And this is what I always shared with students who are going out on an internship. Because you'll experience this soon upon graduation or that first job. You say, do I know enough to take this internship? Do I know enough to take this job? And I always try to share this with the students. You know more than you think you know. Right now, you don't think you have a lot of knowledge. You know more than you think you know, and you'll find that out with each passing day of your new career, your new job, or your internship. And I guess I lived that, and that's what I tried to share with them. And then, you know, from a football perspective, we all think we're ready to be head coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And but until you sit in that seat, and then you kind of look around and again, what am I doing here? You have that confidence level, but and you portray that. And let's put it this way. Everyone learns. Every day of our lives, we learn something. So you're better today, I'm better today, than we were last week. Because we've had 7 days of more experiences and more knowledge. So I think we all get better as we move from day to day in our careers.
Right.
And, you know, I got to say this, though. One big day in my family's, in my life, was the day that I graduated with a doctorate degree from WVU. And it was a big family celebration. My father-in-law, Paul Lanich, they owned a bus company. So we took a coach bus down there and loaded up with a lot of tailgate stuff. And, you know, I'll never forget knowing that my family was there in the Coliseum. And my dad, again, as a coal miner, his dream was to have one of his sons graduate from college.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but here I was getting a doctoral degree.
That's awesome.
And yeah, that was a big special day. And you know, I also have to say I had great mentors in my two brothers, Denny and Bob. They were older than I was, and they kept me in line a lot of times. And there are days where I said, I'm done with this doctorate. I don't want to continue.
Right.
But they reminded me that, hey, your dad's underground working. And, you know, so
kind of
make us all proud.
Right.
And, you know, I'm glad that I stuck it out.
And then, so I guess in the current time, like who's significant to you now? I know you mentioned that you have like grandkids and all that, but is there anyone that like you still like aspire to be, and like what are you doing currently that like?
Well, you know, I do have to mention Dr. Robert Abersole, who was president here at the university, the obviously Abersole Recreation Center, ARC, and he was you know, a mentor during his time. He was an assistant football coach, professor, and he moved on up the ranks to become president. And I thank him for giving me that chance to be a head football coach. You know, other mentors, Stan Konjorski, Paul Bruno, Mike Pariseau, Rod Oberlin, all those coaches who helped form myself. Dr. Larry Lowing was chairman, Charlie Bish, they were chairman in my early years at the health science department. And, you know, for the last 25 to 30 years, Dr. Joe Kelly, he and I are great friends, and we shared a lot. And he's currently the chairman of the safety major, and he's done a fantastic job during his time as chair to take this program to another level.
So you can kind of watch your baby grow. And,
oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, as a grandfather, I mean, there's nothing better with those four little ones. Right now, they're 6, 4.5, and 2 3-year-old boys who were born a week apart. So they're like twins. So when all four of them come to the house, you know, things are lively.
Yeah.
But wouldn't have it any other way.
Awesome.
So I spend a lot of time, you know, with the grandkids and with my daughters and extended family, nephews, brothers. We get together. We enjoy golfing. We have a camp, hunting and fishing. So I'm not bored in retirement.
Right.
Believe me that.
It's still not a job.
And yeah, I desperately miss game days.
Yeah.
I think just that thrill, the excitement of competition, the excitement of seeing the product on a field develop. So I miss game days, but Sunday through Friday is not bad.
Mm-hmm.
Those days are pretty good.
And that was my next question. It was like, what else do you miss about Slippery Rock? So no games, but
and I miss the student interaction. I mean, I enjoyed being a professor.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of folks just see my career mainly football.
Right.
They view me as, you know, Coach Mahalik, and like you said, the name on a stadium and so forth, and the championships and all that. So most folks see that. But I'm just as proud of my academic career here at the ROC, being a professor and seeing that safety management program develop. Yeah. So I guess I miss the interaction with young people. I miss the interaction with the students in the classroom, talking to them before and after class, or stopping in the office. I miss the interaction with the players, you know, before, after practice in the office. I miss the interaction with faculty members on campus.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that was a big plus, because other faculty didn't just look at George as a football coach. I was one of them.
Right.
So we bridged that gap, and I truly enjoyed the relationships with faculty from other departments and, you know, serving on academic committees. So it's the friendship. I'm not even say friendships. It's the relationships that I miss.
Yeah.
But filling that void now is, you know, more time with my wife, more time with the daughters, more time son-in-laws, more time grandkids. So, you know, while you miss maybe a bigger circle in terms of a campus,
right,
believe me, the immediate family is filling that void very, very well.
Which is so well-rounded, by the way. And so you also mentioned the academic committee that you were on. And I also know from, again, coaching, you did a lot of interaction with, like, the cheerleaders and the bands and stuff
like that.
Yeah. So you can talk about that a little bit, but I'm also more curious about if you ever, like cross-collaborated between departments or, like, what you did on the committees and that stuff.
No, I really liked interacting with the student body. Okay, mm-hmm. First of all, I did it on a daily basis in a classroom.
Right.
But I really enjoyed interacting with the marching band. And I would go down and talk with them during their preseason practices. They're practicing out there in the hot weather just like we are. So we really established a good relationship there. The cheerleaders, I'd always say, you're my favorite group. And, you know, we developed a tradition there with them that they would line the pathway from the field to the locker room. And, you know, after a game, my family's out on the field, alumni, media. So it took me a while to get off the field and get into the locker room.
Right.
But those cheerleaders would never leave until I walked through that their tunnel, per se, and high-fiving them. And because, hey, when we win, everybody wins.
Right.
You know, and then I also really enjoyed interacting with the students, and I had developed a tradition there in my last few years that I would go over in front of the student section, stand on the track, and give them a thumbs up, you know, and interact with them a little bit, you know, cheering, give them a thumbs up and give them a salute and say thank you, because we have the best student support of anybody in this, as we call it, PSAC conference.
Yeah.
Our student body is amazing. Rock Rowdies.
Yeah.
Rock Rowdies. Little tidbit. It was, we were in the national playoffs, okay, so this was late 90s.
Okay.
And they, I think we were going to Carson Newman's, we were in the Final Four, and they had a big time pep rally in the field house, and tremendous student turnout.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, every school has their student groups. Duke has something called the Cameron Crazies.
Right.
Okay. And all and other major colleges have their student bodies. I said, we need a name.
Rock Rowdies.
I said, and I think it should be Rock Rowdies. And it stuck. And so that's kind of how that all came about. So, but I love the student body and the band, cheerleaders,
and athletic
trainers are a big part.
Yeah.
Those students put in so much time.
And were you around, what was the mascot you had? That's my, like, I'm just curious.
We had the original Rocky.
You had the OT, that's what I thought.
The original Rocky. Now, you know, a lot of people said it looked like a sock.
It's the best mascot.
So
I'm still mad that's not the current mascot. I would love to have
it. Now, here's a little history, okay? Uh-huh. We're talking history.
Yeah.
So, you know, the current stadium. The old scoreboard on top. Oh no, I'm sorry. Old Thompson Stadium. Okay.
Behind the field house.
Behind the field house. On top of the scoreboard was a rocket. Because we were the Rockets.
Right.
That was our mascot.
Okay.
Rockets, and that was on top of the scoreboard. And when we'd score a touchdown, it. I don't know how they did it, but you know, something like that. It would make a noise like it's taking off.
Okay.
Okay. So. It then, one point in our society, it just seemed to be, you know, wasn't politically correct, you know, in terms of military and, you know, whatever. And so it was dismantled. It was taken down. So now, I mean, the jersey that I wore as a student athlete my senior year, I still have, across the front is Rockets.
Okay.
So now, current day and modern day, if you could call 80s, 1980s through now, across the jersey is the Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So where did it all change? Well, the Rockets was eliminated. That was not the name any longer. So now, well, who are we? What are we? So along comes Rocky.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some history there, and there's a story there about who made it. It was
Boston.
Some student's mother made the outfit, and you know, I remember one of the Rockies would climb the goalpost and sit on the crossbar. So he was pretty athletic.
I think it was Bob Jones or something
Bob Jones.
Yeah, we have pictures.
So he would do that. And then at some point, people started saying it's not attractive.
Yeah.
It doesn't look good. It's a sock. Okay. So, all right.
Yeah.
It was move on from it.
Right.
So now we don't have a mascot. No. We're just the Rock. And a lot of times as a head coach, you know, it may be visiting doing interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing, Slippery Rock brought all kind of national attention.
Yeah.
I mean, newspapers from Texas, California, always calling, wanting interviews. Mm-hmm. So, what's your mascot? I said, we're just the Rock. They said, what do you mean? Yeah, that's who we are. We are known as the Rock. What's your mascot? We don't have one.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Rock. So then there was this Prudential insurance company, like the Rock of Gibraltar. So there was, well, maybe we can do something like that.
Mm.
And for the longest time, we had nothing. And then I think it was Dr. Bob Watson, he came up with the idea, well, let's maybe call ourselves the Slippery Rock Pride.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Pride. So a group of lions is known as a pride.
Mm-hmm.
So thus, the current mascot and a couple renderings of it have to where we have the current visual look
right.
of Rocky,
right.
the lion. Okay, so that's where the nickname the Pride never caught on.
Yeah.
So we're not the Pride, we're the Rock, and our mascot is Rocky,
right.
the lion.
Right.
Well, you know, I'm hearing now there's a lot of interest that are. Concerns or a lot of buzz, I'll use the word buzz, folks want to go back to the original
mm-hmm.
mascot, Rocky. Okay, you current day student, you have a big smile on your
yeah.
face. You would like
yeah.
that.
I would love that because it makes it unique, right? And like, again, going with school pride, there was something about, and I look back in pictures and people were all about that. They're not all
mm-hmm.
about a normal lion because there's so many different kinds. Like, it's already been done, but that's my opinion
yeah.
of it, but I don't know.
Okay, so who knows?
Yeah, but I mean, that's what I mean. So like, you interacted with the band, you had the cheerleading, and then you interacted probably with the mascot at some point as well.
Oh, yeah. Always yeah. like getting pictures with Rocky.
Right, so it was always there. And then so, what were the other ones? Oh, academic committees. And you between departments?
A lot of collaboration with departments in developing the safety major.
Okay.
Because initially, I was it.
Mm-hmm.
I taught every safety course. They're kind of a one-man band.
Right.
So in order to fill in some of the other areas that were needed, I had to collaborate with the chemistry department. They initially taught the industrial hygiene course. The business department, you know, personnel management, human resource management, statistics. So I had to collaborate with a lot of faculty in terms of putting together this curriculum. But then it continued because, well, let's just say if a particular student was having difficulty in class, and it could be just a student in my class, if they'd come say, you know, I'm not doing well in this other class and so forth. I didn't have any hesitation calling another faculty member and say, look, one of my advisees, maybe it was one of my advisees is struggling in your course. What is he or she not doing that they can do better? So, and then if a football player was having some difficulty, I didn't mind calling another faculty member and see, that's where the bridge came because it wasn't the head coach calling them. It was their colleague, who's a professor. Just as I would for any advisee of the general student population, I would do it for a football player. So, you know, I enjoyed that collaboration with other faculty. And, you know, everybody wants to help young people. Everyone
right.
wants to see someone succeed, as long as they're putting forth the effort. So that was something I enjoyed interacting with faculty, and then just, you know, some general committees campus-wide. One was called Academic Forum Curriculum Committees. You see a lot of faculty from other departments, and you know, you interact it that way.
Yeah, and then how did you see like the curriculum itself change? Because you also talked about
because
like the rocket changed with all of was politically correct and whatnot. So you had that changing, and then had the curriculum. So.
Well, the safety curriculum. Let me put it this way. So initially, we might have developed four courses. So I taught those four courses. Then we had collaboration from other departments. Well, the major started growing, and so we added faculty. So now we could create our own industrial hygiene course to where it's taught within the safety department now. So it to the point now, I think there's 10 faculty in the safety major. And I don't know how many, I lost track of how many major courses, all taught within the safety program. So it was a birthing process. You know, nobody's born an adult.
Right.
You have to grow.
Right.
And just the same with the safety major. We started with 3 graduates, and now we're close to 500. So. Now, there is an interesting story about the first 3 graduates of safety.
Yeah.
You want to hear it?
All ears.
Okay.
We're all good.
So, working on developing this Bachelor of Science program in safety, coordinating with my doctoral program at WVU.
And these were your kids, right? These 3 that graduated?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, okay. So, imagine in your sophomore year, I come to you and I say, Taylor, I want you to start taking some courses towards a degree that doesn't exist right now. So you're a sophomore, and I presented to you, hey, there's going to be this real great degree. It's not here yet, but by the time you graduate in May of 1982, it'll be here and approved, and you'll be the first graduate. And you're a sophomore.
Yeah.
You're going to take that risk.
Depending on the relationship, maybe, but
okay.
Yeah.
So.
But
let's just say.
Usually no.
Let's just say it's fall of 1980. Uh-huh. So there were 3 students that said, okay. Talk about a recruiting. That was one of the best recruiting jobs I ever did.
Yeah.
So these 3 students, so December of 1980, end of the semester, they come in and say, hey, is it approved yet? No, it wasn't approved. I mean, rewrite after rewrite, send it to the state,
right.
Change this, change that. Spring, May of 1981, hey, is it approved? We gonna graduate with that in another year? Not yet, it's not approved yet. December of 1981, the end of the semester. Hey, coach, is it approved? No. I mean, I'm sweating now.
Yeah.
Okay, I've sold these 3 students.
Out.
That when they graduate one more semester, they're going to be the first graduates in this new Bachelor of Science program called Safety Management. And it's not approved yet. They have 1 semester to go. Well, the end of January of 1982. Never forget that day. Now, there was no email then.
Right.
You know, there was no quick text messages.
Morse code, I was
kidding. In the mail, okay, in the postal mail, comes an envelope. Slippery Rock University, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Approved.
Cool.
So now, in late February, I was able to say, 2 months, you'll be the first grads in this safety program.
Yeah.
So I credit those 3 for taking a risk. And I was just with one of the original 3 end of June. He was on campus.
Okay.
Showed him the building. And I mean, we had nothing like that. It was just books and, you know, maybe a video here and there.
Yeah.
So. I'm proud of that fact that those 3 have had successful careers and are still working in the profession.
Right. So was it just the job growth, like, expectancy that you started it, or was it for, like, other reasons, or, like, what made you so invested in that?
Well, the chairman at that time, Dr. Larry Lowing, okay, I was hired, and he said, here's your assignment. You're going to teach these courses, but we want you to develop a Bachelor of Science program.
Okay.
And it's like, how do you do that?
Right.
So that's where faculty assisted me and helped me. Okay. But a lot, and research showed, I said earlier, research showed that the supply wasn't going to meet the demand.
Right.
So he said, we got to get on this. This is going to be a great program of the future. Okay. I mean, you talk about being prophetic and a visionary.
Yeah.
And so that's how I was assigned that project.
Okay.
And 4 years, took 4 years to get it approved. And talk about disappointment. You say, hey, I got a real good proposal now. Now give it to the faculty and come back. Maybe you've had this experience. You've turned in a project, comes back, there's a lot of red stuff on it. You know, this needs change. So that was challenging, but just kept getting closer and closer and closer.
Yeah.
So
the faculty is stuck by with you.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I mean, they were all supportive, but I, you know, doing the legwork didn't make it any easier when you thought you had a good product and you had to change a lot of things.
Right.
So.
I think that's pretty much it. Is there anything else that you would like current or future Slippery Rock people to know about?
Well,
anything you want to add or talk about?
I guess something I always tried to share with the students, players, whatever you want to say. The word failure. Everyone views that as a negative.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's just the opposite. You just learned what not to do. You just learned that what you tried didn't succeed. Failure is not a negative. It's a chance to build and get better. So I always said, there's nothing wrong with stumbling and falling. What's wrong is if you don't get up and keep moving forward. And that's kind of where failure comes in. I failed. Sure, we get down on ourselves and we view it that way, but you got to see the other side that teaches you and is going to enhance you and will allow you to get better. And, you know, from an athletic standpoint, I'll just go back to, I think the year 2015, season 2015. It was our fourth game of the season. I mean, we had won now three championships in a row throughout the last 4 years. And we're ranked in the top seven in the country. You know, we're feeling pretty good about ourselves.
Right.
Maybe it's called overconfidence. So we go and play a team that no way should have even been on the field with us. And they beat us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I'll never forget, on the field after that game, talking to the team. And I still say to this day, and a lot of people, well, how can a loss ever be a positive?
Yeah.
Because we lost to a team that was inferior, and they weren't going to be a contender for the conference.
Right.
But it got our attention. And then we won the remaining, into the playoffs, the remaining 9 or 10 in a row.
Yeah.
If we don't fail, then we might fail in week 7 or 8 to a team that would win a conference because they beat us.
Right.
But that failure early in the season, we learn from it. We learn that we can't overlook anybody. We learn we better be ready to play every week. So that's my example of failure. Oh, you lost. We're done. Season's over.
Yeah.
No, it's not over. It's just early. It's over if we don't prepare, because we were good enough to beat everyone and anybody.
Yeah. And you had the highest career wins, I'm pretty sure, like in Slippery Rock football history. I'm pretty sure. Like, so, yeah. I mean, whatever you did worked, so.
Good coaches, yeah. Good players.
Right.
Good administration supporting you. Yeah. It's not me.
Right.
It's not one person.
Right.
It's a team effort, and that team wasn't just on the field. It was the cheerleaders. It was the band. It was the athletic trainers. It's the athletic director.
Right.
You know, Paul Lucan was and Bill Lennox, athletic directors that I was head coach under, and they were supportive and very fantastic to work for. So it's not just one person. It's
right.
As I said, players, coaches, family. Mm-hmm. If I don't have family support, and you know. Wives of coaches, they're the real winners mm-hmm. because they're doing everything, like my wife Laura, mm-hmm. I'm in meetings till 10, 11 at night. The grass still grows.
Right.
The kids still need run around. They have appointments, they have activities. She has a full-time job. So, you know, she deserves a lot of credit for my career as well yeah. because she took care of the house when I should have been
right.
back there doing some other things. But, you know, they and my daughters, you know, a lot of time away from them, but they were the biggest fans. They liked being on that sideline, and the officials knew they were there many times.
Yeah.
so
their own personal cheerleaders, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And yeah, I remember them. They're little in their own Slippery Rock cheerleading outfits.
Oh, they had an outfit.
Oh,
that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah,
awesome.
And then you know they'd go on the track, and as they grew older, they were on the track. They were supportive. Timeouts that take water out to the players. I mean, and that's what we tried to profess here in our program.
Right.
At least I'm going to talk strictly football now.
Okay.
It was a family.
Right.
That's what it was. It was a family, and when you have that family. I would often tell coaches, look, your son, your daughter's playing. They have a high school event. Go. Mm-hmm. Well, no, I got this meeting. No. They're only going to be a junior or senior once.
Right.
You got to go watch them. And then when my daughter, Beth, was playing in high school, coaches told me, go. You made us leave. You go. Watch your daughter. Be there. So we were a family. It wasn't a coiny phrase. It was a reality.
Yeah.
It was a way of life. In our program, and tried to bring that into the classroom as well.
Right.
You know, now maybe didn't spend as much time with the students in a classroom as you did with players, but still, we're all here trying to better ourselves. So let's work together to get this done. So, and the one thing that hung in the football office, as soon as you walked in, we had four goals. Okay. First goal. Have any idea what it might have been? The very first goal for you as a student and rock football player.
Try your best.
Okay.
Have fun.
Well, we're going to make it a little more concrete.
Okay.
Earn a degree.
Okay. Championship ring.
Earn a degree.
Okay.
Next was win the conference.
Mm-hmm.
Next was bid to the national playoffs. And the last one was win a national championship.
Yeah. So they have both in their hands, right?
Never got that national championship. Never got it. Finished, as I said, in the Final Four. Came close,
yeah.
You know, lost a game in the last couple minutes.
Right.
And that would put us in the national championship. So that's one goal never got to experience.
Right.
But the other phrase, and I was just talking to a former player yesterday on the phone, and he said, Coach, still remember what you always told us after every game. And I said, what was that? And he repeated it. So before, you know, we'd say our thing, and first thing we did after a game, we gathered as a team. The last thing we did before we left the locker room,
mm-hmm.
we had team prayer.
Okay.
I strongly believe in that.
Yeah.
First thing we did after the game on the field when we gathered, team prayer. Then I'd make my comments.
Right.
But the last comments were, remember, you represent this great university. Remember, you represent this outstanding football team.
Right.
Remember, you represent your families. Remember, you represent yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've then, you know, give our Rock Pride. And off they went, because I wanted them to know as they moved throughout that weekend or throughout their lives. And the one player said, I share that with my kids. You know, maybe in a little different context,
yeah.
But
yeah,
because we represented this university.
Yeah.
When we were green and white, we represented the team. And then you represent your family name,
mm-hmm.
and yourself. So it was more than football.
Yeah.
It was academics and football.
Yeah.
And they can work together, and they do work together. And I'm most proud of what the success safety alums are having, and the success that some of the players are having. And I told them, I'm more proud of you as a man, as a father, as a husband. So it goes far beyond just drawing up a play, far beyond taking a test in a classroom.
Right.
It's a life process.
So you take it with you.
The Rock has been good. Great place.
Yeah.
Thank goodness I found my way here.
Dad left you.
It was so good. Yeah. Yeah,
he left me. You didn't have to go.
Come back. Come back.
Right.
So good that I never left, Taylor.
Yeah. It's awesome. Is that everything or anything else?
No, I think that
ran out of
that covered quite a bit. If you know,
yeah.
I think I hit some of the important family messages that I wanted to share.
Yeah.
The coal mine story.
Oh my.
And the
good words.
Watching my dad and my wife. You know, I just had to give her all that credit. My daughters. Yeah. So.
Good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.